Hello, listeners. Meat Hook Jim here. We are going to do the obligatory parental advisory explicit language. Thanks for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror. Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meat Hook Jim here with the Wrestle Horror Podcast. Alongside me, my co-host, Donnie Hoover. Donnie, it's Wednesday. What the heck's going on?
Oh, man, it's hotter than heck. I know that, so burning up. That's what I'm doing.
Well, I guess my next question is it hotter? Is it hot up there in Canada with our guest, Frankie the Mobster, FTM, the Beast King, whatever you want to call him? How's it going, man?
I'm all right, guys. Nice to finally see you and get to talk to you guys. But to answer your question, it's not that hot right here, especially in the part of Quebec I'm in. It's a little city called Sherbrooke. Not really a little city, but somewhat of a big city. But it's totally lost in Quebec. It's like in the pits. And it's not that hot. I'm not complaining about it because I fucking despise hot weather. See, I said it, my first swear word. There's going to be plenty more to come through the course of that.
We'll have to make this an explicit one.
Oh, okay. You should. You should definitely have put a warning. From what I'm told, Mephisto is the one that connected me to you in some way. I thank her for that. She's a sweetheart, love her to death. She should have told you that I have very bad language habits.
You know, it's all good. And Lufisto, you were the first person she mentioned when I asked.
She's the best. Everybody in this business is going to tell you that they go way back, but we go way, way, way back. I started out, I was 16, 130 pounds. And Lufisto was right there by my side, and we just tagged along. And our relationship never changed. She's like a sister. I have nothing but the uttermost, like, purest form of love you can have for someone, for Lufisto. She's the best.
I got to say, you guys perform great together. I watched you and Lufisto in a TV championship match.
We had fun with that match.
It was awesome. I mean, she's
a fucking animal. She's a fucking beast.
I was like, you didn't take it easy on her, that's for sure.
Fuck no. And that's what she wants. Had I taken it easy on her, she would have given me out. And rest assured, though, she did not take it easy on me, though.
Right.
You can tell.
She's a nasty, nasty little bitch. And that's why I love her so much.
She is one of the toughest women in this sport today.
Not in the sport, in the fucking world.
Right.
And I mean, if a car was to hit her, the car would probably fucking go off crying. She's not even human in a way. It's that thing we have, us French Canadians. I think we all follow PCO's road. We all go from being young, naive wrestlers into turning into non-human forms. It's a pattern we have.
But, you know, I got to admit, you're a beast yourself, man. I mean, I've watched you in several matches, and, you know, I'm 6'4", I'm 300 pounds, and you scare the hell out of me.
Well, you're bigger than me, bro. It's all about illusion, I would say. I'm 245, 250, depends. It wobbles depending on what I eat. But I think that my acting background does a lot to help portraying enormous size. I think the aura of being gigantic has a lot to do with the way you present yourself.
Right.
A guy that's 200 pounds can look humongous. Like, he's not a physical specimen per se, but you must know, of course, about Speedball Bailey.
Yeah.
When Speedball's in the ring, you look at him and he looks like he's 300 pounds of fucking I'm going to kill you kind of machine. Because he presents himself in such a way. Not to take anything away from him, I'm obviously physically bigger in stature than he is. And It's my take on wrestling as well, given that, meaning that when I started wrestling, I was a puny little fuck. Like, really, like, frail. Not thin, frail and fucking skinny. Looked like you know, like I had the physique of, I'd say, a praying mantis dying of AIDS or something. But not that there's anything bad with dying of AIDS, but we're not going to do that subject. Do you know anybody dying of AIDS?
No, not at the moment.
I like Philadelphia. It was a great movie, just to make a link. I'm a movie buff, but enough of that. Saying that, I started wrestling. I was told I had, like, a lot of potential by a few of the old timers back here. Anybody that I meet, like in the business, would say, you have a lot of potential, but man, you need to get some meat on you. So I hit the gym like a man possessed. I really dedicated myself to that. And I have been eating so much goddamn food since I'm 16 that I turned into what I am today. My thought on wrestling was that anybody that looks like a wrestler, everybody that looks at a wrestler, on the street should be attracted visually to that wrestler without even knowing who he or what he does in life. A wrestler should catch the eye of anybody he crosses path with and be somewhat mythical or superhero fucking looking. You don't have to be 300 pounds of muscle, but you have to project that in your aura, in your, like, in who you are. As a person, that you got to bring that to the table as a wrestler, I think. It's not an opinion that anybody shares with me, and especially since the business has changed so much that they want to go into a more realistic sports aspect. But I firmly believe that, as far as I'm concerned, my preference is that you got to look like something out of this world if you want to really make it in this business. It's an old school mentality. I think you're going to tell me this is what used to be in the 80s and 90s, and it's not so much nowadays. But I stick to that. I'm really old school on that aspect. Like, I'm never going to be the brightest, most technically gifted, fuck no, wrestler there is. But I try to grab people's attention the second I step through the curtain, and I want everybody to just fucking go, oh, shit, look at that fucking guy.
Right.
And I want them to remember me even when they leave. I don't give a shit if they remember the match or the moves that I did, but I want them to be traumatized and, like, petrified by what they see. If I succeed at that, I think I've done my job.
Well, I got to say, you know, at watching some of your matches, you're larger than life as the Beast King. It's just, I saw you, and the first thing that crossed my mind is I do not want to meet him in a dark alley.
It's a good thing, because I tend to hang around in dark alleys at night, especially just to scare the fuck out of people. All joking aside, if I had that impact on you, well, I'm happy about it, because that's what I'm trying to do.
You succeed in spades, you know, and I don't know if you still do it, but for a time you were carrying a snake to the ring.
I have my snake right now, obviously on my side of things, business is running really tight, but I have a friend who keeps my snake because my wife is terrified of fucking snakes. She doesn't want to head in the house. And I respect that. Mind you, the reason we at first I kept it at the house, but one day it slipped out of its cage, but the cage is in like a drawer. So I kept the drawer door closed and I had to run out because I had to go to a show. And she wouldn't even get in the house. She's like, what do you mean? The snake is loose? Oh, yeah, but in the drawer, right? And she, oh, my God, did I get heat for that. She's forgiven me, I think. But I had to leave my snake at a friend's house. And that friend of mine has, like, 12 snakes. So he's lent me some of his pets. I mean, there's a time where I came to the show with a 14-foot-long, 150-pound, like, Burmese python. That was a bitch to fucking carry, though. Heaviest goddamn thing I've ever had on me. But it looked phenomenal. It looked like the old-school Jake the Snake yellow snake. But actually, it was bigger than Jake's.
Okay.
It was just humongous. And people I had children crying. That's another thing. In this, with a character like mine, if you make children cry, I think you've done your job.
Wow. Absolutely. I've always been old school, you know. I grew up watching wrestling in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
I don't want to look like this locked back in the day kind of guy, but I miss those days. Yes. I wish I'd grown and in the business in the days of kayfabe. Those were the best days.
Absolutely.
I think a character like mine in the 70s or 80s would have worked perfectly.
Yeah.
But, well, I will never know. But I think nowadays people can appreciate the artistic aspect of it.
Yes.
So that's why I managed to, like, ride along and still be in the business at the age I'm at, being that I'm still on the independent level. And I managed, I think, to stay relevant through all the efforts that I've put in artistically to bring a out of the ordinary, like, extraordinary, scary character.
Yeah. Now, speaking of old school mentality and looking the part and all that, do you still practice the kayfabe mentality as well? Like in when you're out on the streets with people, or
you know what? You can blame me for that. You can give me shit. I like to work. Like if I go to any show and I meet the fans, I want to have that vibe where they're going to have a hard time approaching me. If I do that, I'm not. But if a kid approaches me, I still want that kid to go home with a good, like, memory. And I always be, like, trying to be in character, but if I made a kid cry, especially, I want to make sure he leaves with a smile on his face. I try to be, accessible and approachable to the fans by the end of the show, not because I'm a merch bitch, like most of the indie guys, but simply because it means a lot to me. That's why I do it, even to this day. I don't do it to be looked upon as a great wrestler by my peers. In all honesty, I want to be looked upon by my peers as someone who's easy to work with, who's fun to work with, and who's going to give a great show. But to me, what's most important is those people that pay their hard-earned money to come to a little show or a big show or a medium show, any show that I'm on, who invest their hard-earned money to be entertained and to have that. That's what's cool about the indie level, I find, that proximity that you have with the wrestlers, something that might not be, like, doable or achievable with WWE, because it's such a large production and the guys have so much to deal with and they would have to go through so many people. When you're on a smaller scale, such as I am with the independent promotions, you have that luck, as far as I'm concerned, to be able to reach the fans directly and give them a little bit of yourself when they can feel that they've shared a little moment with you, whether it be in what you do in the ring or that simple handshake or smile that you do to their child at the end of the show. To me, that's what's the most important. I want everybody to leave that place saying, God, that was a true professional entertainer. I don't know if that makes any sense to you. I know it's not necessarily what you should do given the darkness and the really, like, macabre aspect of my character, but I still want people, I will live with the fact that nowadays people are fully open to the fact that we are putting on a great spectacle for them. And I want them to appreciate the spectacle that I'm putting on for them, but I want them to know that I care about their approach to it and their attachment to it. And I want to give back, basically.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And like you were saying, even though you're on the independent level and not up there in the WWE level, you guys out there doing your thing still has an impact on that little kid that comes up to you or watches you in the ring, or, you know, even if, you know, he goes to talk to you and you walk away from him, that could have a negative impact on that kid, you know?
That's, you know, it would break my heart, because I've had that happen to me as a kid, not only from professional wrestlers, but various celebrities that I've met. Not that I don't want to be pretentious and think, I want you guys to think that I believe to be a celebrity. That's not the case. Mm-hmm. But to a certain degree, when kids show up at a show, you're larger than life. You're this superhero. You're this, mm-hmm. this beast king, so to speak. And they look at you sometimes with eyes as big as saucers. I know it's an old old school expression, but it's true. And there's this disbelief that they hang on to. We're like, my God, this man is terrifying. Yet most of times kids will like at first be terrified of me, but they go like, but this guy's cool. He's got the snake. He spits blood. He's a monster. And then you just blink at him or give him like a tiny little smile and they feel special. I'm not saying that I'm special, but that's what I love the most about this business is being able to have a kid or just any random person, make them feel special because you provide them with attention after they've given you so much of their own.
Absolutely. You know, and that's one thing. That's one of the reasons why I loved going to indie shows.
Yeah.
You know, I've been to the big shows. Quite frankly, I'm not a fan of sitting so far up. I have to have binoculars to watch what's going on.
Yeah.
There's a local promotion here near me that I go to where I usually sit front row when they're running. And with working with Donnie, I'm also a ring announcer for Donnie's promotion.
Oh, sweet.
So we love the interaction that wrestlers have, especially with the kids.
Oh yeah, that's the best.
It is. In spite of your gimmick, your character, and at the end of the day, like you said, when they go home smiling, you did your job.
Yeah.
Even if they are a little scared.
Oh, they have to be scared. Hold on, that's my son. Sure. He just interrupted the broadcast.
Hey, hello. What's up?
Hello.
He doesn't speak English, though. He's as French as it gets. Okay. He had chocolate pudding, I think, if you look at his mouth. And now he's giving me the big eyes because he wants to say something. But he does that. That's what he does. He's a magical little kid. Sorry about that.
Speaking of kids.
He's got to get his shit in, too, you know?
Right.
So what were we saying before? We were so rudely interrupted by Joey.
We were talking about making the kids a little bit scared at the indie shows.
Yeah. Even my son sometimes will look at me funny when I'm wrestling because he's like, went to a kayfabe breaking. My name is Mark. So he's like, what is Mark doing? What is Papa doing? Because I'm there spitting blood. He's like, Papa doesn't do that at home. Obviously, I try not to. But we wrestle around and whatnot. I made him wise about the business. I don't want him to think that. I don't want him to be scared by coming to the show that I might get hurt or not. Mind you, with the character that I have, I rarely do get hurt. I'm the one beating people the fuck up. I want, like, even with my son, it works where he's like mesmerized about what he sees. And at the end of the day, he comes and gives dad a big hug. And he's the best gift you can get by giving back to anybody. I've had like adults who were genuinely touched by the affection that I've given them. And to be honest with you, I don't work that in the States that much, but I'm happy with the reputation that I have back home as being one of the nicest. I'm not the one saying it. I've had people tell me, one of the nicest wrestlers that you can meet. To me, that's really fucking important. To the fans. I have a lot of fans that go like, most of the fans will say, like, I was terrified of him until we spoke.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'll say, Mark, that when I messaged you about coming onto the show, it's like you were very, you know, you were very professional, you're very cordial, and you know I've messaged other wrestlers in the past, and I've either gotten,
some are fucking assholes. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I've got no response.
I don't want you to put names up, but some are fucking assholes.
Yeah, absolutely, you're right. I mean, there's been some that have blown me off saying they're too busy, and I'm talking about indie people.
That's funny. You know? That's hilarious. And I'm not. You know what? I didn't want to go on a show wanting to get exposure off your back. I just want to have a chat with you guys.
Yeah.
To be on your show and have fun talking about the business. It's three guys sharing a common passion and we're just talking the shit. And I think that's awesome and that's fun.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's not, and most indie guys should cherish those moments because not only does it give them exposure, but it allows people to see especially having conversations like I'm having with you guys, it allows for the fans to see another aspect of them. It makes it even more interesting, I find, when you get to see the guy behind all of the show that he puts on.
Right.
Something more genuine about it. And that's what is truly important to me. You got to be genuine as possible in this business if you want a genuine connection with the fans and with the people that you work with or the people that you talk with, such as you guys. It's got to be true. It's got to be real. And it gets lost a lot nowadays, I find, with a lot of people that take themselves too seriously. If they want to do that, I'm never going to criticize that. It's their loss.
Right.
At the end of the day, by the end of their career, when they look back and they'll realize they've passed on such magical moments, whether it be with kids or with people like you, interviewers, or just passionate people like them, and they kept their passions to themselves because they thought they were better than that. I think that they're the one that are losing a lot of magical moments.
Good advice. Yep.
So I want to steer the conversation a different way right now, Mark.
Okay, go ahead.
And you mentioned that you were also an actor.
I am. Yeah. I've done a few little American things.
Okay.
Because Montreal's a big production city for movies. Mm-hmm. I was blessed to be in one of the last movies Paul Walker did called Brick Mansions, which was a remake of a French movie called Banlieue 13, which obviously you won't have seen. But that was a movie with David Bell, the French guy who invented parkour.
Okay.
Which Jim Morrison does so much. Okay. And that was a tremendous experience. Mostly on the human aspect of it, because Paul Walker was one of the most genuine human beings you could ever wish to meet. He was just the nicest. First day we walked on set and we locked eyes, he gave me this big smile that he had, that million-dollar smile, and he just shot the shit with me and talked, and he was just as genuine, as I just said, that was important to me, as genuine as you could possibly be as a human being. Same with Keanu Reeves, who I've had the chance to meet on John Wick, on the set of John Wick 2.
Okay.
Phenomenal actor, of course, who's had a tremendous goddamn career, and he was such a great man, and he's so dedicated to what he does, that he shares his passion with people. When he sees a passionate person, he'll go right to them and he'll talk. He went over to me and I had like the smallest ass part in the movie. I didn't even make the cut to the final production, but he talked to me for like minutes, close to half an hour, simply because I think he saw that I was as passionate as he was about what we were doing. But you probably had a question. I totally cut you off and I apologize.
Oh, no, I'm gathering all this. One of the questions I was going to ask is, aside from some American films, have you done any acting in any French films or?
That's where I did a lot of work.
Okay.
I'm typecasted, obviously. Most of the shows that I do, I'll be a very bad person. Okay. And you know what? If that's what I'm given, I'll play it and I'll do everything that I can. I've had a part in what is the biggest, highest rated French show in Quebec TV called Unit 9. It's a show about a female prison. Kind of like Orange is the New Black, but in French. It's okay. not as stereotypical. It's way more nuanced than Orange is the New Black would be. And it's darker, really more. Like the bad people in it are extremely bad, to make it simple. And I was in part of the jail system, but I had a scene with the lead actress in the series. And at that point, she had been in jail, incarcerated for 6 seasons. She had never gotten out of jail. And that episode that I was in was the very first time through the course of the show where she had a chance to get like permission to go visit her family. And when she did, while I was at her house and her brother, I used her brother to get her, and she, the character's she's a lesbian, and I raped her and beat her up in order for her to bring drugs into her back to the jail she lives in.
Wow.
And it was a very, very hard scene to do, because it's a very traumatizing experience, even as an actor, because you need to go extremely far within proximity with the actress who I'd never met before. But she was so generous and kind and open to the level of intense, with the intensity that we had to use. She was so generous about her emotions that the scene turned out to be like a major success, mostly because of her, because I was just new to the game. But just to tell you how successful it was, the day after it aired, I went to the convenience store, and like I told you, it's the highest watched show on French TV, so everybody watches it. Right. And there was this old lady that was behind me as I was waiting at the counter to pay my stuff. And you feel it when somebody hits your guts and stares you down, even if it's in the back of your head. And I turn around, and she's looking at me like this. She is with that vein bulging on the side of her 75-year-old head. And she had to be like 5 feet tall, but I turn around and look like goddamn Godzilla wanted to eat me. And like I told you, I'm very nice to people, and especially with the part that I played. And I look at her and go, "Hello, lady." And she doesn't say a word. She just stares me down. Like, "Well, you must have watched the show yesterday, and maybe you were displeased with the scene and what." As I put these words out, she spits on my chest.
Nice.
And I'm like, "What?" That is pretty goddamn on the spot. I was kind of mad. That is really intrusive. But looking back, I didn't tell her off. I told her that she was lucky she was a lady. That I did, because my reaction might have been slightly different had she not been. But I told her, like, "You are an idiot. Because you know what the first thing I'm going to do when I get back home after this?" She goes, "I don't give a fuck." But in French, which sounds like it's back home, which makes no sense to you, but basically it's the same thing. I told her, like, "What I'm going to do is I'm going to head back home, get on my phone, and you know who I'm going to call? I don't give a fuck." I told her, "I'm going to call Eve Landry," which is the actress. And she looks at me like, "Who's that?" Like, "That's Jane. You know that character that you love so much? That character that you've been through, whose life you've been through for 6 years? And who you care so deeply about that you felt the need to spit on me because I fictionally raped her on a fictional show as I was portraying a fictional character. You understand? I'm going to call the actress that portrays that character, and I'm going to tell her that a 75-year-old dirtbag lady reeking of, like, old candy and bad breath spat on me at the convenience store. And you know what your beloved Jane is going to say? What a dumbass old cunt." And she just stared me down. She couldn't believe that I just said that. I'm like, "Have a great day, lady." And I left. And I approach acting. Mind you, I'm going to rephrase that. I approach wrestling the same way I do acting. I completely lose myself in the performance that I give as an actor. I look at wrestling as an art form. To me, it's the most interactive art form that there is, more so than musical shows, more so than improv shows, more so than plays, definitely more so than movies and whatnot, because you act directly as you are fed the energy by the people that you perform for. And you feed on that energy and you just give it back. It's a constant circle of like interactive energy giving you your performance, and by that same performance the energy is being fed back to you. It's the most magical form of art that you can ever be a part of.
I couldn't agree more. Let me ask you this.
Yes.
Have you acted in any horror films?
I did a small short film about, it was a slasher.
Okay.
It was called, well, it's not, like in French, it's called Le Boucher, meaning the butcher. Okay. And where, in which I portrayed a butcher, very demented one, that is. And I wish I would be, I was given more chance to be in horror movies, because I love the genre. Me and my wife are huge horror fans. Mind you, there's plenty of films that people might not look at as horror movies. But I kind of like any traumatized, like to me, one of the best people might call horror movies, I think it's Silence of the Lambs. And I look at it as a horror movie because I think that movie, especially for Anthony Hopkins' performance, was fucking terrifying.
Yes, I agree.
And the I forget the name of the actor, unfortunately, but the one portraying Buffalo Bill was a terrifying, terrifying character. That's the purest form of horror, when you can go over like the special effects and the like the gore, and you can hit the horror point where people are shocked and feel ravaged and destroyed, mentally and emotionally destroyed by an acting performance. That, to me, is the best form of horror. Obviously, I love the horror genre by the look itself. Hellraiser is a favorite movie of mine.
Oh, yes.
An inspiration for the Beast. Pinhead's a true inspiration for the Beast King as well. One of the many. I like old slashers, old school 80s movies like Jason and Freddy and whatnot. I'm 40, so this is what I was raised on. Of the recent day horror, I like, you know, the Paranormal Activity and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
People call that horror. I think that's crap. They're okay movies, but I don't think that's horror. Why don't you go on and you tell me what's your favorite horror movie?
You know,
you must have a bunch, but I mean.
Well, yeah, given the name of our show.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
I'm old school myself.
Okay.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre has always been one of my favorites.
The original one?
The original, yes.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough to meet Leatherface before he passed away.
Are you fucking serious?
Yes.
Well, you're a lucky bastard.
Yes.
That's awesome. Was he nice?
He was very cordial and everything. And, you know, I spoke to him. Nobody was coming to his table when I went to this con.
You met him at a con?
Yeah. So I spoke to him for probably about 5 minutes. We just chatted back and forth about everything. And then he signed the autograph for me. He says, "To Jim, you're next."
That's so awesome.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I have to tell this story. The listeners are going to get tired of the story because I've probably told it at least. I haven't heard it,
so the listeners will have to do, we'll have to listen through it again.
Yes, they will. Back in the 80s, when I was, I had a girlfriend, and we had just got done watching the Texas Chainsaw Massacre on videotape. And, you know, she was scared, and I drove her home, and I went back to my house. I was probably 17 at the time. Went into my garage, got my chainsaw.
I know where this is going.
Yeah.
I
drove back to her house, parked down the street, crept up underneath her bedroom window, and fired up that chainsaw.
That's my kind of thing. That is funny as fuck. Did she leave you on that day?
To this day, unless she watches this show, does not know I did it.
She has no idea that you did it?
No.
Wow.
He's like, I'm going to try that.
She told me about it, but I never admitted that I did it.
That is awesome.
Because I had the cover.
My wife would... Right away, if we were to watch a movie like this, and I was to pull a stunt like that, the second she'd hear the sound, she'd be like, "Mark, you fucking asshole." She'd know right away. That's my kind of humor. I like pranks. And but that's definitely, if I tried that, she would be so mad at me. Yeah, I'm bitch made. I'm totally, she's the boss. I have the best. I'm the luckiest bastard on earth, in all honesty. I have the best lady you could ever wish for. And it's like a blessing for me that I cherish every day to be able to have that moment in my life. I know this might sound cheesy to you guys, but seriously, I don't think there's happier men in life than I am.
Nothing wrong with that, brother.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you this, being that you're a fan of the horror genre.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy going to haunted attractions?
What's that?
Haunted houses? During Halloween season?
I haven't done that in the longest time. As a kid, I would go. I've been wanting, right now I live in an apartment, which makes it impossible. But when I buy a house, I want to put like haunted houses up. And I want the kids to be goddamn terrified and run away without candies so I can eat them all at the end of the day. But no, I as a kid, there was a few of my neighbors that used to put some up and they would scare the hell out of me, but I would still go to any. I haven't been lucky in the way that I haven't been to that many as an adult, where I believe I would appreciate it way more than I did as a kid, where you just feel those right away, that fear. But I would appreciate the effort way more as a fan of the horror genre if I was to go into one of the legitimate haunted houses that people put up nowadays. I'd love to do that, but I don't get the chance to now.
That's a shame, because I am a professional haunted house actor with over 10 years of
experience. Are you really?
Yes.
I've been asked, actually, there was this horror festival going on near my city, and the promoters asked me to be a guest on it. I don't know what exactly they wanted me to do, but they go please bring all your character gear. We're going to put you in a situation where you're going to be able to scare people. That's fine by me. I'll be right there. I believe there was some form of haunted house there, something of that nature. We're more like some kind of a hostel gimmick.
Okay.
With crazy, obviously, if you look at me, crazy characters roaming through the house, and make it one of these, the way they make those interactive houses nowadays where people just go in and they have no idea what to expect.
Right.
I think it was going to be one of those deals where people and you really want to scare the shit out of people. Mm-hmm. I have a friend of mine told me he went to a zombie house. Okay. I'm like, what is that? And you had actors portraying zombies and you really had to legitimately run for your life. And the actors were going, fuck it. They really want to get to your ass and beat the fuck out of you or eat you and whatever. I don't know how this works. I haven't had the chance to go to one. Give me a second. So, if you put up a gig and I'm in Ohio, please let me know. I'd be glad to be a part of it.
Oh, absolutely. We know people.
Yeah, sure.
I love doing it, Mark. It's
I don't even doubt it.
One of my favorite times, and you don't get to do this a lot in American haunted houses because they generally have a no-touch policy.
Is that true? Is that so why? It takes away from the. I mean, I'm not saying you should attack people, but you should. There should be that proximity that brings legitimate fear.
Oh,
if you're just in a box and
going, oh, no. Woo, no.
We'll see that once or twice and they'll get bored by it.
No, people.
It's sad in a way, I find, that you don't get the chance to really, because I'm sure you'd love to really make it more interactive.
Well, we do to a degree. I mean, I would get in people's faces. I mean, I would be this close to them.
Yeah.
Technically, we're not supposed to touch, but one year, there was an arrangement at the haunted house I worked at. We were allowed to do that.
Wow. That's
and I was called the dean. I was in a military. I was half zombie, half human.
Wow.
And we singled out this kid about 16 years old in the queue line. So myself and my zombie doctor started circling. Well, he took off. He didn't want anything to do with us. But we were right on him.
You chased him?
Oh, yeah. He didn't get out of the queue line before we caught him. My partner threw him over his shoulder.
Wow.
And carried him into the middle of the haunt. Okay. Wow. And put him down. Now, my buddy worked on the inside. I worked on the front and the inside. So I'm outside at the moment working the crowd. Yeah. And he sticks his head. He goes, come here. And he takes me back behind stage. He goes, that kid we just grabbed. He said, he pissed all over my shoulder.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he was drenched in it, and he didn't change his costume.
That makes it even more awesome.
Absolutely.
That makes it legitimate.
Yeah, it was.
And that's you know, and acting would say that's method, actually.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, there's nothing better than a good scare. You get somebody scared, and that adrenaline flows.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's bringing fear to someone, and being good at it, making people scared, is a lost art. Whether it be in haunted houses, such as the ones you perform in,
right,
or even to make it a link to wrestling, that's why I love portraying this character. Because you get to bring such pure, raw emotions to people.
Right.
Which I think is, some wrestlers will bring other forms of pure emotion, like excitement and sheer joy over winning this championship. My character, the way I look at it, really has no concern about championships. Mm-hmm. What he wants to do is make people's lives miserable. And if he goes after a belt, it's not in order for him to be champion. It's to make sure that the person that truly wishes to be champion doesn't get the chance to.
Okay.
He wants to ruin lives. He wants to ruin dreams. He wants to make people's life just hell. And that, I think people can feel it when I play it. Because they see that, they feel that this character is really out there to create pure violence for the sake of it, not for the sake of sports, not for the sake of competition, just because he wants violence to be present and to be what dominates or represents his world or his view of it.
And it appears to me that, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Don.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say that shadow of doubt that you put into your character,
yeah,
really, you know, brings back the whole kayfabe vibe.
Getting
that people are smart nowadays, but is he or isn't he? Is what they're thinking. Is he for real?
I don't know who it is that first said that, but it's been taken. It's been like quoted a bunch of times. I don't mind if people don't think that our business is real, but I want them to think that I am.
Yes.
I can't recall, I'm not going to say that this is for me. It's not. But I remember really being, feeling in like that was a quote that I would come up with because it's the way I look at the business. I want people to completely get lost in what I do. If they're terrified, if they laugh, if they're like, if they're happy about the violence that I bring, because some people are. Mm-hmm. Which, and that's what I think is fun about it. One of the fun sides of today's nature of our business is like people can appreciate a character, and people are so much more open to violence because that's what our society is all about.
Right.
I don't want to make a social critic, but I'm just saying that violence is everywhere. You can't evade it. You can't escape it. And when you present it in a new way that they are not familiar with, some people will be entertained or surprised or shocked or thrilled or disappointed with it, but they will have a reaction to it.
That's the name of the game, getting a reaction.
Yeah, I just thought of this as I was sitting there listening to you guys, and I think, Jim, I'm actually going to make this a part of the show every show because okay. I really like this idea.
Okay.
So we're gonna bust our cherry with the Beast King here. So Beast King, I'm going to put you on the spot with this one. As you can see behind me, I'm a slasher fan myself. Jason's my guy, and the reasons I like slashers so much is because, in my opinion, human beings are the scariest thing on planet Earth. So if the Beast King was in a horror film and was the main villain, what would be his best kill?
Oh, that is an awesome question. We were talking about having original questions before we started.
Right.
That's awesome. I'm gonna try to come up with something. It's been done in a movie before, but I would definitely like to kill someone by feeding him one of my snakes. Hmm. And just having him choke as my snake is going in his mouth and looking at it. And as he's about to pass out, you, like, I don't know if that's too graphic, but whatever. And you pull the snake out, and the person, like, is almost dying, yet pukes because of the snake having been in his throat. And as he's puking, you pull off his Adam's apple with your bare hands.
Ooh.
There you go.
Nice. I like that.
Very creative.
Yes.
Oh, there's so many ways. Like, I am been working on a project. It's somewhat of an horror and sci-fi web series. It's still in the creative process, but at first, the writer wrote three books. She wrote one book, and then I met her just to shoot a tiny fight scene for one of her first book scenes, and she made me the main villain in her books for the two next books.
Nice.
And we're trying to get that going on the web. And that character is like, his name is Nat Inger. It's hard to say for me in French. N-A-T-T-I-N-G-E-R. And he's the heart snatcher. He pulls out people's hearts and eats them to feed off their emotions after having scared them. So he eats their petrified hearts.
Very cool. Have you seen the Hannibal TV series?
That is my favorite show of all time.
Yeah, so the kill
scene. That's my favorite show of all time. And I would say that Mads Mikkelsen is my favorite actor of all time. And his version of Hannibal Lecter is my biggest inspiration for the Beast King.
Very cool. Yeah, that's one of my favorite shows as well. The kill scenes in that and the staging is so unique.
It is so visually stunning.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the acting is superb. Everybody on that show is absolutely perfect. And the writer's vision of the Thomas Harris novel is so, it's I find, even better than the movies were. Mm-hmm. It's so dark, yet it is so violent, yet so visually beautiful.
Yep, that's what that I was going to say.
Just, I've said it, I've used the word before, I'm saying it, it's mesmerizing. You watch, and not a lot of people, I don't think everybody enjoyed that show because it's not everybody's niche, I would say, because it was so artistically perfect that people would expect something different, more maybe more abrupt or rough about Lecter, but they made it so classical looking and beautiful mm-hmm. that I don't think people were understood this, every aspect of the vision that the director and the actors had about that show.
Yeah, it was definitely a thinking show. Yeah, but it was definitely a thinking show. They would put like subtle clues in each scene, in each show to just keep pulling you along. And I said, it's one of my, we're actually rewatching the series and we're halfway through season three. So
that's funny because I did like a month ago.
Yeah,
yeah. It's funny that you mentioned it. My girlfriend's a big horror buff. She didn't really get into the series. It wasn't her style. And she's like, "You're a schizo about that series." Because I was, you can even talk to me when I watch that show.
Right.
I am so possessed by the performances and the photography. That's from an actor's point of view. From having been in movies, that's like I told you. Visually, I think it's the most stunning television I've ever seen, I've ever watched. Mm-hmm. Like when he's cooking, it looks goddamn delicious. Yeah. And you know he's cooking human insides. But
you want to eat it.
Made me hungry.
Yeah.
And that's what's the most traumatizing, I find. They succeeded in making such what is to be, should be looked upon as disgusting things. They made them so beautiful. And like you said, every kill in that movie is like visual poetry. And that's what I think everybody, like, to me, that's perfect horror. When you make violence poetic and beautiful, that's what horror should be. I That's my take on it. I'm not saying everybody should look at it this way, but I personally
find it. No, I agree completely. It's supposed to be disgusting and gory when they show it, and you're just like, wow, that's actually very cool, you know? Yeah.
But you got to be – and some people will think we're psychopaths thinking that, but no, we're horror fans.
Right.
Right. We're a different breed.
That's it. And I wouldn't change it one damn bit.
Me neither. So what's on the horizon for the Beast King, as far as, shows and, I mean, this whole COVID thing's really put a crimp on everything.
It's just destroyed me in all honesty. I, like I said earlier, I'm blessed to have such a perfect family. I know that a lot of people had a hard time going through the confinement and whatnot. Especially down here, it's been crazy. People are going ape shit over it. And we're not remotely half as bad as you guys are when it comes to the amount of cases. We're lucky to have a great healthcare system in Canada. It's a really a blessing. We are extremely, and the government has been extremely careful. Security measures have been increased, and some people go against them for the sake of going against authority. Mm-hmm. That's a debate that we could go on, I guess, for hours.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel blessed that we've had such levels of security and good, a good present and careful and attention paying government to take care of us down here. But obviously, it's put a lot of restraints on everybody's lives. I'm not able to perform on any aspect of any form in what I do, whether it be TV production is shut down completely down here. Nothing is being done. It's just starting to open up again. I'm going to knock on wood, meaning that I am sitting in front of a wooden table. I auditioned for something this week. Something kind of major, and I'm, for what it's worth, now the entire audition process has changed. Usually you'd go to a casting director and perform the audition in front of them and get feedback so you can play it again once or twice. Now it's all self-tapes. So you take a guess on what it is that production might want, and you have your own take on the scene, and you just pray that it's the right one. And then you send it along. So I auditioned for this thing. If I get it, it'd be like great artistically speaking, exposure speaking, and money-wise. It'd be great. I don't want to – it really, it's not about the money for me. It's just getting a chance to play. And to perform, and if I'm given the chance to do it on a bigger stage, to me it's not about being recognized, but being able to touch as many people with my efforts as a performer. If I get on a bigger stage and I can make more people smile, I can entertain more people, I'll be happier. That's the way I look at it. But right now, there's not that much coming, and wrestling is a big no-no down here. In Quebec, there's nothing. Nothing, absolutely nothing. No way. There's been, I believe, some backyard shows. I'm too old for this shit, in all honesty. I do love performing, but I want to do it for security purposes as well.
Yeah.
On a secured stage with like high production values to, I don't want to sound bitchy or difficult, but I want to do it on a wrestling show and not on a sub wrestling show, because I want people to see a fine product. I want to be attached to something great. I don't want to sacrifice the quality of what I do just for the sake of performing my desire to perform. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it makes sense.
But I want to give – I've become really difficult about the performances that I put on in judging the quality of things that I do. I'm never really truly satisfied. So, and I know that doing a show for the sake of doing a show to satisfy myself, I would not eventually down the line be satisfied, because I know that most of the people will look at it like as a half show and it wouldn't be what I do.
Right. Yeah, we're with you there. We're shut down here in Ohio still too.
There's nothing going on at all.
Not in Ohio, nope. They're starting to come out with some rules and regulations, but with all the restrictions, it still won't even be profitable or even worth putting on at this point.
I wouldn't be able to give you the slightest indication as to when it's going to start again down here either. I know that registered sports such as boxing, kickboxing, and UFC and mixed martial arts and whatnot are starting to be figured out as far as restrictions are concerned, but wrestling in Quebec does not fall under the same jurisdiction, so to speak, when it comes to shows that we put on. So we are stuck with we're like part of the entertainment factor of the entertainment division, I should say. I'm sorry. And really, no musical shows are being put on, no comedy shows. Movie theaters are just starting to open again, but there's no movies to be put into them, to be shown. So I really, in all honesty, don't know how it's going to be, especially for wrestling.
Yeah, no, you said that you're grouped in with entertainment, so you guys you're not part of an athletic commission or anything?
Not at all. No, it's really it's not as regulated as it would be. I know that when I had the chance to perform in Philadelphia, we needed a license from the athletic commission. There is no such thing in Quebec for wrestling.
Okay.
I know some promoters wanted to get it registered and have us, but it didn't fall through. I think it was too complicated, and there was a lot of money that had to be involved.
Yeah, they're better without it.
So, like, it's somewhat of a rebel institution but compared to other sports.
Yeah.
And then yet again, people don't look at our product as sports. So, and I'm not saying this in a negative way. I think people nowadays appreciate the athletic efforts that we put in, even more so than they did back in the kayfabe days, because they truly understand nowadays how difficult it is. And the level of athleticism has risen so high and so much higher than it did back in – I'm not saying that back in the day it was not athletically driven, but the risks are much greater, I find, nowadays than they were back in the days. And the fact that people are open to it, I think they appreciate it way more now, as it's not looked upon as a sport, but they look at us as athletes nonetheless, I think. That's my take on it, though.
As well they should, because you are athletes regardless of what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. It's been demanding. I've been doing this since I've been 16. And my body will tell you that this is a rough goddamn business. Especially my knees. If body parts could show a level of hate to you, I think they would despise me. My knees would definitely despise me for all the strain and damage I've inflicted them.
Yep, I agree. I was active late 90s, early 2000s, and I still feel it every morning.
I think it's going to get way worse the day I stop. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my body loses that beat and that drive and that because we get accustomed to it. You know. Yeah. And our body just follows through and just, well, that's exactly, there's no other way to put it. It gets used to it, and we take the abuse as a part of everyday life. Yeah. Once we lose that beat, I remember when I was younger, much younger, I had to take a year off because of back problems. When I started again, God, it was painful. Every bump, every hit, every turnbuckle, every chop, every single move felt like I was being shot at. And I don't want to be one of these guys that when I stop, I won't be tempted to come back, because I want to stop this performing when I'm at a level where I can still perform at the fullest of my capacities. I don't want to slow down. If I feel like I'm slowing down or I'm about to slow down, I'll stop. It's really important to me as a performer to be able to always give the absolute best performance that I can. And if I feel I can no longer give 100% of the product that I've always given, I don't want to jeopardize that. I don't think it's ego. I care too much about the people I perform for to give them less of me. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's really important to me to be able to give the best performance all the time, every single time, whether it be on screen, whether it be in wrestling, anything that I do, every aspect of my life, even when it comes to relationships with my wife, with my friends, I want to be able to be the best version of myself that I can be. And if I feel that any aspect of myself is slowing down, in relationship I won't apply because I'll work on that. But in this business, if you're slowing down, I don't want to be doing this for the sake of money. To me, it's a passion. It goes way, way, way before money. And if I'm still in the business and I'm still going for only for money's sake, well, call me. Just let me know if you realize that and wake me the fuck up, because I don't want to be doing that.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark. Is there one piece of advice that you would give to somebody just starting in the business?
Every advice has been given. I would say that it's going to be cheesy shit, but you got to believe in yourself through all the lies you're going to be fed, all the bullshit you're going to be fed, and all the false hope you're going to be given. Okay. Every deception that you're going to be faced with in this business should be a lesson as to where you want to be. Because you will be deceived, you'll be disappointed, but ultimately you need to keep marching and walk forward and live your dream. Because everybody that's in this business that is serious about it has a dream to go to the highest stage possible. And I firmly, honestly, really believe that if you are 100% dedicated, anybody that truly fucking wants it and is willing to make the sacrifices that it takes, you will find a talent in you. You will find the passion in you, and people can succeed. If that's what you want, I believe every kid can find a way to make it, but you have to be more devoted, more passionate, more intense, more dedicated than every other person around you. You got to push yourself in the ass. You got to believe in yourself. You just got to keep marching, basically. That's a long-ass advice. I'm sorry, but
that's great advice, and I'm going to make my daughter listen to this because my 24-year-old daughter is training to be a professional wrestler.
Well, good luck to her. And if she's as passionate mm-hmm. as you are about what she loves, she'll succeed. You're going to have a successful daughter, buddy.
Yeah, I have all the faith in her. She's got a great trainer in Cody Hawk, and she's
that name is extremely familiar. I don't believe Cody Hawk and I have ever met, but I've heard that name, seen that name, probably seen his face if you show me a picture, but I do know that name.
He trained Dean Ambrose or John Moxley.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. So he obviously knows his shit.
Yeah. He trains right here in our hometown here in Ohio. And, you know,
Ohio's got such a great history for wrestling.
It does.
I think it's one of the core cities of core states. I'm sorry. When I say city, that's ridiculous. It's one of the really big wrestling hotbeds in the history of our business. Mm-hmm. There's so much, such rich history for wrestling in Ohio. And I've never been there, but so many wrestling has gone through, your state, and so many great things have come out of it. So many great talent. So you guys are lucky in a way. I wish such Quebec has a tremendously rich wrestling background.
Yes, it does.
Such great, great, legendary performers have come out of Quebec. Even to this day, my best friend Kevin is the man. I say my best friend. I don't want to look like I'm name dropping, but I honestly, he's one of the people I love the most in life. I'm the godfather to his son.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah, we're really, I love this man to death. I am so blessed and honored to having been named the godfather to Owen. He's the greatest kid you could ever possibly hope to meet. And so is Elodie, and his wife is the sweetest lady ever. So he's just the hardest working man in showbiz, and he deserves every ounce of success that he gets. So I lost my train of thought. Why did we bring up Kevin? Oh, we're talking about Quebec history. Yes,
yes,
indeed.
Yes.
Yeah, so you guys have a great wrestling history. We have but nowadays, wrestling in Quebec is far, far, far from the stage that it used to be on. And a lot of people are trying to bring it back, but I say that Quebec nowadays, unfortunately, but not unfortunately because it's a totally different thing, but that audience, that target audience that wrestling has most of times been centered upon, really has fallen to MMA's hands in our province, mostly because of Georges St-Pierre being such an amazing talent. Back home, it's really more like an MMA base. Wrestling will always be popular, will always have a place in people's heart, but I wish it would come back to like its heyday, or the presence that it had in its heyday. Because in wrestling in the 60s and the 50s and the 70s in Quebec was the thing. It was wrestlers down here were gods. They were gods. There was, you probably know, Yvon Robert. You know who that is? That's really old school.
Yeah,
that's he was in the 40s and 50s. Same time, Maurice Richard, you know who that is? The hockey player from the Canadiens?
Yeah, I do know.
He was the most important, the most popular man in Quebec after Yvon Robert. Yvon Robert was more recognized than he was, and he was richer than Maurice Richard. Hmm. And Maurice Richard is one of the biggest legends in Quebec history. Robert was even more popular than he was.
Wow.
That says a lot about how big the business was back home.
It does. It does.
Do they take that same attitude, I guess, toward the MMA fighters? Like, especially, I mean, obviously GSP, he's one of the
I have ever. Nothing but the utmost respect and admiration for MMA fighters.
Do the fans look up to them like they do the wrestlers and the hockey players and all?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. GSP back home is looked upon as
like a legend,
like a legend and a god. Mm-hmm. And what's great about GSP, from my point of view, is that he's so generous to people and so genuine and so such a gentleman and a class act that it gives its sport. His sport had such a great visibility and great aspect and a great view for people who just discover it, listen or view or listen or watch or just get to hear Georges St-Pierre. And he gives his sport a great reputation. I like to think that I try to do the same thing with wrestling, but not on a scale as big. Never could I even dream of. Like, Kevin back home is the man. He's really popular. Really popular. And what's great about him is finally somebody is being shown in the media, in Quebec media, besides Jacques Rougeau.
Right.
Because back home, it's the only guy people in the media would hear about is Jacques Rougeau. And I don't want to get into it, but him and I, probably doesn't even really know me, but I don't really like him. Let's leave it at that. For personal reasons, I don't want to, I wouldn't, you'll never hear me bitch somebody or talk negative about someone. Because I think that's cheap when you do that. If I have an issue with him, I'll discuss it with him. I don't like his views and his opinions on certain things. I disagree with him, but I'm not going to say anything negative about him per se, because I think that's cheap. Anybody who does that in this business or any other business who goes on like media or any media, even social media, and throws negative shit at someone, I think is like a bully and a piece of shit. And I don't want to be that guy.
That shows your moral fiber.
Sorry. So to speak. I value respect and cordiality and politeness more than anything with any person that I meet, even someone I might be in total disagreement with. I try to find a way to respect or at least open up to his visions of things, not necessarily to be in accordance with it, but I think anybody in this world deserves respect until they fuck it up.
Can't put it any better than that. So, Mark, tell us, how can people find out more about the Beast King FTM, about you? What about your social media, things like that? How can people
find out? I'll be honest with you. I'm not a big social media guy. I've just gotten into using Twitter a lot. I would like for more people to go on my Twitter account, and maybe I'll post more shit. It's the Beast King FTM on Twitter. My Instagram and Facebook under my real name. I keep them a little more personal.
Sure.
But I really want to get like more involved in the Twitter thing. So the Beast King STM, check it out on Twitter. And I, to be perfectly honest, I stay on character all the time on Twitter. I try to make it like old school.
Sure.
And I'll post some mostly like promos, written promos, poetry, well, within the realm of the Beast King, so it's not cute poetry, and training videos and whatnot, because I'm a douchebag, who likes to boast about his abnormal physique. But if you want to go on Instagram, it's Marc-André Boulanger. That's really hard for English people to say. Mark Andrew without the W. Boulanger would be Boulanger. That is so French. I will have to grant you that, but I am as French as it gets. I'm pea soup and sugar shack to the core.
And for normal like Americans, though, you could probably get that as Mark Andre Boulanger.
That's what most Americans are, Boulanger.
Boulanger.
They'll even go as far as saying Boulanger. I remember when I had my first ever WWE tryout in 2006. It was not in the same form as they are being given now. Mm-hmm. It was really not as organized as tightly. It was in Ottawa. It was people running it were Fit Finley. I was fortunate enough to have a chance to meet this man, who I think is a tremendous institution in the business. Tommy Dreamer was a great, 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 great guy, great wrestler, very innovative and very articulate and intelligent man. And Booger T was there too. Booger T was a great, great gentleman as well. But there was like 25 of us, and most of which really honestly did not belong in a WWE tryout. Most of them were just starstruck. So was I, to be there. But most of them looked like they never exercised in their lives.
Oh,
and still to this day, the tryouts are a bitch.
I believe
they grind you and they destroy you in there. I remember there's a guy that passed out. Another guy fell down a set of stairs and broke his legs. And I'm not even ribbing you or trying to make it more dramatic. That is the legitimate truth. And after that, we're just being a chat. We do so many squats. Like you lose counts. You want to vomit. Your lactic acid is growing all the way up to your brain. You become numb at a certain point. And after you're done with that, and you can barely, you're walking on very wobbly legs. You get to go in the ring. And at that point, they ask you to cut a promo. And I'm like, good, finally. And I cut a promo. And they call up a bunch of names. Every guy is being called upon. And when they got to me, they're like, obviously they're reading my name off the list. And like, right. Marc-André Blanger. And then Booker T goes, that's Blanger. Like, not even close, but thank you. And I used it for the promo they asked me to cut. You know, like, they go, like, I think it was Steve Kern. Steve Kern was there to go, introduce yourself and tell me who's your favorite WWE superstar and how you'd beat him in a match. And they tell us to run a minute. And most of the guys went on, and they were interrupted or cut off, or went on for like 10 seconds and had nothing else to say. They didn't understand, and what do you expect to make in this business, especially in WWE, if you're being told to cut a minute promo and you go 15 seconds?
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a pivotal aspect of our business, I think. And if you don't understand that, and you're going to audition for TV production, more so than you're doing for a wrestling promotion. And on TV, you talk. If people don't understand that, I really don't understand what they're doing in this business or trying to get to TV. Maybe that's people watching this, a lot will disagree with me, and they're entitled to. But I think that in this business, if you can't talk, stick to the indies. No offense. Not that the indies are a bad way off, but it's just, if you want to work on TV, you got to be able. If you want to be a star on TV, if you want to make money for the bigger promotions and for yourself, you need to be able to talk. So I basically cut a promo saying that my name was Marc-André Boulanger, looking at the trainers and asking them to sing along, which they did not do. then I went on. And didn't pan out. I had two of the tryouts. That didn't pan out for various reasons. While the second one that I had, I had a good vibe about it, but my brother committed suicide on the same day.
Oh, no.
So when I had to follow up my attention was somewhere else.
Right.
And the time after when I went, I didn't do all the, I'll be honest, it's all on me. I didn't do all the sacrifices that we needed to go through. I didn't follow up with it the way I should have. And I was not persistent enough. And for the longest time, I tried to put blame on everybody else but myself. And I'm the only one to blame. That's why I'm telling your, like, aspiring wrestlers, especially your daughter, just push yourself in the ass and do everything it takes if you're serious about it, so you don't regret not taking all the steps you could have in the future. Don't live on deception. Live on resolution and achievements, whether they have led you where you want to or not. Do not leave any doors unopened. That's very important. I am telling you that from experience.
That is very, very sage advice indeed for anybody that's getting into this business, not just my daughter, but there's other people out there.
Yeah.
If it was my daughter, then she'd have the field wide open, but it's not. So, Mark, the Beast King, FTM, whatever we want to call you, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the Wrestle
Horror
Podcast.
That was a delight, and I'll be back anytime you guys want to talk horror and whatnot. It was a really genuine pleasure, guys. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, and we will definitely have you back because you are an awesome interview. I love the flow of everything, and when you get going, it's great. I love.
I talk too much. I know. I'm like such a. That's a problem I have on some interviews that I've done. See, I'm doing it right now. I just get going and I talk way too much.
You never talk enough for this show. Once again, thanks so much for being here. For Donnie Hoover and myself, the Wrestle Horror Podcast with the Beast King FTM, we'll catch you on the next episode.
Yes, thank you so much, and thank you for everyone watching.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets. Facebook.com/WrestleHorror. Instagram @WrestleHorror. Twitter @WrestleHorror. On our YouTube channel, The Wrestle Horror Channel. Also, you can find us at www.WrestleHorror.com.